This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. And we're going to hear about all things political from Mark Ballard of The Advocate, who's on the ready. But we begin with Jill Kidder, who heads Visit Baton Rouge. She's done this for the last couple of years, and she's been in our fair city for 18 years working in this realm and other ways. She was president and CEO of the Louisiana Association of Convention and Visitors Bureaus and previously served as executive director of the Alexandria Pineville Convention and Visitors Bureau. And she is from the hamlet of Pine Prairie, Louisiana, halfway between Alexandria and Opelousas. And she is here to tell the story of our fair city in a way we don't usually hear about. We hear, of course, about the crime and other things that perhaps are not so good. But we do have a lot of people come to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And, of course, our city has to compete with one of the great tourist destinations in the world, in New Orleans. And I saw last year that Louisiana actually had more visitors than the state of Nevada. And not all of them go to New Orleans. Some of them actually come here, and they come here for reasons other than football, right?
They sure do, Jim. Thank you so much for having us. We really do appreciate it. I was sitting out in your lobby and looking at the luminaries and dignitaries up on your wall. And so Visit Baton Rouge is very glad to be seated here with you today. And thank you so much for helping us share our story.
Well, tell us about why people come to Baton Rouge who come here for other reasons than living here or coming for an LSU football weekend.
Well, about 8.8 million people came here last year. And that's not our research. That is third-party research that is conducted by the state of Louisiana and U.S. Travel, which is a large umbrella organization of ours. And those people spend about $1.1 billion in our community. So you can imagine what the tax revenues from that spend is. And we estimate that an approximately 57%, 58% of that are from out of state. And we have a great number of international visitors as well. And, you know, I know we do compete with New Orleans, but in a lot of cases, they are our front door. And so we see that clearly. And people want to do something. Once they've experienced New Orleans, they want to do something else. And they want to see true, authentic Louisiana culture. And they want to see it not just from the New Orleans perspective, but from the Louisiana perspective. And we provide that here in Baton Rouge.
Your number for Jill Kidder, who heads Visit to Baton Rouge, is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757, and of course, emails go to talk at talklouisiana.org. 8.8 million people visiting the capital area, and if you do the math, which I just did, that means there are about 24,000 visitors here in Baton Rouge per day. For yes. Every day of the year. And, of course, sometimes there are fewer, sometimes there are more. But that's a lot of people, which explains why downtown, when I worked there from 1983 to 2003, it had no hotels really to speak of. And now look at it.
It definitely. And we're so pleased and proud that the Bell, which will be renamed, of course, is going to be reopening. And those rooms are going to be about 270 to 280 rooms additional in our community that we haven't had since before COVID. And then we also have the New Origin Hotel downtown as well. So this is just more excitement that we see happening because of the visitation in our community.
Jill Kidder, native of Pine Prairie. How many people live in Pine Prairie?
Oh, Jim, I'm not sure what the population is now, but when I was there, the sign said 749, and I was related to 748 of them. So I told you earlier, I think I literally had to leave the date. So it was a great way to grow up.
But I bet it was.
Yeah, I left there and, of course, came here to LSU and graduated from there.
And there is a Pine Prairie High School.
There is.
I bet it's a good school.
It is. It was a great school, and all my aunts and uncles and cousins taught me, so you couldn't get away with much before I got home. Everybody knew what I had done at school.
877-217-5757 for Jill Kidder. Luke in Spanish Town. Hi, Luke. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jill. Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. Jill, I'm talking about downtown. I'm wondering how many out-of-state and out-of-country visitors come to downtown Baton Rouge, and what role do music concerts, music festivals have in that visitation? Thank you.
Well, hey, Luke, thanks for the question and the call. Music is critical, and festivals and events are critical to our downtown and to our whole community, and certainly something that Visit Baton Rouge, as well as other economic development entities and some of our civic organizations, are taking a very close look at. How do we position it all across our community and increase that? We do feel that there are a lot of folks that are coming into the downtown, both for conventions and meetings and events at the Raising Cane's River mm-hmm. Center, but also just staying in our hotels, because downtown has a lot to offer from restaurants and the evening entertainment as well. So, Luke, the numbers are large. We have the largest percentage of our hotel population that is downtown. That occupancy percentage is somewhere in near the 70% mark. And that's very high for our community. So I think that is where the concentration of people are. It's also where all of the folks who mm-hmm. are coming here on our ships, which are coming in, almost on an every other day basis. They're getting off in downtown, and they're going out and exploring our community as well.
Tom on Bluebonnet says he likes the Blues Fest and wonders if it will be a continuing attraction and perhaps bigger and better, and it's a good event. And also asks about whether we'll get the Bayou Country Superfest back. Is that one gone for good? Is that a possibility for a renewal? That was Kip Holden's baby.
Yeah, it was a fabulous event for our community, and I think that it may not come back in the same form, but there may be we are looking at a big festival event for our community, and how do we bring that back? And again, we're not working alone. We're working with others in the community to say, how do we increase all mm-hmm. forms of entertainment? And with the Blues Fest, Visit Baton Rouge has been working with the Blues Fest group for quite some time. I know you probably saw this year that we had an additional stage in downtown near the Watermark, which was a Watermark stage, mm-hmm. Because of some of our investments in that particular festival. They have been able to expand through downtown, and we're wanting to do more of that. We think that if we can expand our festivals and events that are already happening, that's some of the best way that we can accomplish our mission.
And another listener, this is Holly in the Garden District, notes that George Strait, I think he broke the world record, 111,000 at Kyle Field, Texas A&M, for a concert. Now, Tiger Stadium, we could get 111,000 people in Tiger Stadium if they put them on the ground in addition to the stands. So I think that's a record to be broken. Yeah. You got to find the attraction to come, but...
Well, look at Garth Brooks. That's
but he probably got 100,000, uh-huh. but I think the number's 111 now. You got to break that record, and this is the place to do it.
Yeah, and we're so pleased that our partners at LSU are working with us. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Savannah Bananas, but we did bring them in mm-hmm. along with our partners at LSU. Those are some of the additional events and types of events that we want to bring. And hopefully with the talk of this new arena, that some of this will also be something that will bring more attractions here.
Now, that will affect the River Center. Is that a good move?
You know, I think we just have to figure out exactly how to position all of our assets. And that's the most important question we can ask, is how can we not cannibalize one asset over the other? How can they all work together efficiently and effectively? And I think that conversation is being had right now. And so that's very important, Jim, is that we as a community make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And the mayor has put together an oversight committee that is an open public body that is going to be taking a look at the River Center and what it should be. And we have invested in a research project that has already come back to us. And we have also in a new research project for the River Center to determine what are those efficiencies for all of the assets that could be coming to Baton Rouge.
You're hearing Jill Kidder, who heads Visit Baton Rouge and has done so now for a couple of years. She knows this area well, having been here for 18 years now by way of Pine Prairie. And we'll go to the phone lines again for a few more minutes with Jill after we return in this 89.3 second timeout. Your number 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. In just a bit, Mark Ballard, but a few more minutes with Jill Kidder, and we'll go to the phone lines in short order, 877-217-5757 again. But Jill, before she arrived in Baton Rouge, logged, I think, about a decade in Chattanooga, didn't you? And that's a burgeoning city, and I would imagine that experience has been helpful, and there are probably things happening there now that we would like to replicate.
Absolutely, Jim. I was very fortunate in that I spent about four of those years in Chattanooga in a downtown hotel. I managed a hotel there. And then after that, I went to work for the Downtown Development Organization, which was putting together the projects for the Tennessee Aquarium and all of the downtown riverfront area, and had the opportunity to sit at the feet of some of the really great minds in downtown development and community development, and creating those places that people wanted to be. And I think that that's where we are right now in this community, is that we have an opportunity with all of the projects that are being talked about, the entertainment, the visitors who are coming here, what's happening at LSU, what's happening at Southern, all of downtown, in mid-city, in all of the places in our community. I do believe that we are primed and ready. And if I could just bottle how a visitor sees our community compared to how we see it sometimes, I think that that positivity and that excitement about Baton Rouge would just explode, because I do think we are primed and ready to be like the Chattanoogas and the Greenvilles and those communities who have gone before us and done this really well.
Please be concise with remarks to Jill Kidder. Paul in Opelousas. Hello, Paul. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Jill. Recently, a food critic, pretty famous food critic, came to Baton Rouge to taste Baton Rouge independently of any publication.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you know his name.
Yeah.
What do you think of his review of Baton Rouge's food scene? Thank you.
Well, I think it was great. Anytime you can get someone like that, we do a lot of that, Paul. And it was Paul, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. It has been just wonderful, especially for those restaurants that he did visit, I guess you could say. But we bring in a lot of influencers like that, and our culinary scene is one of the stories that we're working heavily on and working with all the restaurants in the Louisiana Restaurant Association here.
877-217-5757, if you'd like to get in with Jill before Mark. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hello, Phil. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Yes, good morning, ma'am. My question is, would it help if, like, old buildings, like the 100-year-old brick building that's being discussed now by the casino, I know they're asking for permission to tear that down. Would it help to leave structures like that?
Well, certainly. I'm a historic preservationist at heart. I worked in two historic hotels in my career and just absolutely love them. But I do think that those are certainly decisions that the city has to make for themselves. I would hope that we could find other uses for it, but that's a business and city decision.
Mm-hmm. And Jill and I were talking a bit prior to airtime about the Bowlers, who used to come here regularly, and they're coming back soon. And there was a question from one of our listeners. When are the Bowlers coming back?
Oh, the Bowlers are going to be arriving March 1, so get ready, everybody. 180 days of bowling in the River Center. So they're going to start building out in December for their bowling alleys there. And we are thrilled. It is our Super Bowl, everybody. We need to
Super
get ready.
Bowl.
Yeah,
it nice is. Little play on words
yeah,
there.
It really is. And so 50,000 people who bowl, those are the bowlers who will be arriving, and then probably another to 25,000 who will be coming with them. So let's make Baton Rouge the happy place that we know it is and welcome these visitors.
How many bowlers?
50,000 bowlers.
It's a lot of bowling.
Yeah, and they're coming in every 3 days. Mm-hmm. So the teams are all, you know, working through as they, you know, win and they'll stay. And then they'll come back for the finals.
And there are some events coming sooner than that.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we've got Marucci, who, you know, sports in our community has really exploded. And I know a lot of that has to do with the fact that LSU has such a brand. And Marucci has such a brand. And so Marucci is here with about, I think, 215 to 220 teams playing baseball, traveling ball. We have this consistently throughout the year with USSSA and with Premier, with Traction. We have wonderful partners in Breck and the city and others who help us. You know, soccer, U.S. youth soccer, the Southeast Regionals was here last year in June. They want to come back next year, so we're getting excited about that as well. There are so many opportunities, but we do have two conferences, one coming at the end of this month, the 1st of August, which is the Delta Waterfowl Conference. It's a national event, and it's an expo at the convention center. And then we also have the mayor is bringing in the River Cities and Towns Initiative, and it's all the cities up and down the Mississippi River who work together on economic development. So we're really proud to have those two national groups coming in, and we've got so many more that have filled in between that. But our numbers are good for this year. We're up in our revenues overall. And it's been a real positive experience for me, Jim. So just proud to be there at Visit Baton Rouge and to work with the team that we have.
All right. Now, this is something that I suspect you're playing catch up on as well, but that was a stunning story in The Advocate yesterday, front page, about the foreclosure on One American Place. And that, next to the state capitol, tallest building in Baton Rouge, what in the world's going on there?
Oh, I wish I knew. I'm like everybody else, just catching up. And I'm not sure exactly what's
and
going to happen there.
Mainly an office building, of
it
course.
Is,
but
yeah.
It could be that used for something else. But I think a lot of people who have offices there would like to stay. So,
well, certainly look at what Mike Walpole has done with Rivermark, you know, and made it such a mixed-use facility. And that has worked extremely well. So maybe that's an opportunity.
And the Watermark downtown is Walpole's as well.
Yeah.
And it's doing well.
Extremely well.
I remember the Capitol House Hotel was shuttered from 1984 to 2006, 22 years. And now it's been reopened for 18 years. It's a nice hotel as well.
Very. And it's one of our great selling points for conferences and conventions, of course, and that are wanting to come to the River Center and have their meetings just at the Hilton. You know, there's plenty of meeting space there alone. So it provides it's a great asset for us to sell.
A lot of history in that hotel as well.
Yeah. And great that the tunnel is open now, and that's a super experience for everyone.
I know John Kennedy stayed at that hotel, Harry Truman did, and probably others that I'm unaware of, because Huey Long held court, and a listener asked, where did Donald Trump stay when Miss USA was here? I don't think he stayed. I think he just flew in and flew out.
Flew in and flew out. I'm not sure. That would be a Paula Rego question.
That would be a Paula. I don't think he coaxed the Donald. Donald Trump doesn't like staying overnight. He's got pretty comfortable surroundings wherever he may be, whether it's New Jersey, Florida, New York. He likes to stay at home, and he's not the first person to do that. I remember a story about Mario Cuomo when he was governor of New York. He spent like 11 nights away from Albany when he was governor of New York. So some people like their surroundings, and they like predictability, and I guess there's a case to be made for that. But also, if you're a politician, it's good to see other places. But I would imagine Donald would have drawn a crowd. We would have known about it if he'd stayed overnight at one of our fine establishments. And a listener says, where did Obama stay a few years ago? I know that one. I know that one. He stayed at the Holiday Inn Select, Man of the People, on Constitution Avenue. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, the Holiday Inn Select is where Barack Obama stayed. Thank you, Jill Kidder. Mark Ballard with All Things Political is on deck and ready for you at 877-217-5757. More after this. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. And now we have a half hour of erudition and enlightenment from the man with his finger on the pulse in Washington, D.C., and Milwaukee and parts unknown, Mark Ballard of The Advocate and Picayune, 877-217-5757. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Well, there's a convention going on in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and last night, J.D. Vance, who will turn 40 on August 2nd. He's 39, same age that Richard Nixon was when he became the vice presidential nominee of Dwight Eisenhower. And, of course, Nixon ended up serving 8 years. Vance won't be vice president for 8 years, but he might be for four, and I suspect he, whatever happens, will be running for president in 4 years. But he addressed the convention in Milwaukee, and he's a guy who has a complicated backstory with President Trump, former President Trump. Before we get to your assessment, the story in the New York Times today mentions the first meeting that Vance and Trump had at Mar-a-Lago in the winter of 2021, February of 2021. It says it got off to a bad start. The president, former president, had a thick stack of papers on his desk, printouts of Vance's copious broadsides against Trump. Vance's past criticisms, it included an essay in one of Donald Trump's least favorite magazines, The Atlantic, where J.D. Vance described Trump as a cultural heroine, a purveyor of false promises to the white working class. Trump, using an expletive, bluntly told Vance, "You said some nasty stuff about me." The discussion that followed has been described in this story, and apparently the two patched things up. Trump ended up supporting Vance for the United States Senate seat that was open in 2022 in Ohio. Vance won, and now he is the Republican nominee for Vice President of the United States. Now, does he bring anything to the ticket that Trump did not already have, Mark Ballard?
I would first say that, you know, before they made up, I mean, in all this, that J.D. Vance would not be a U.S. senator if not for Donald Trump. And what J.D. Vance has done is he's kind of like the scribe of the MAGA movement. He's been able to write about it and explain it, what's going on and how it all kind of fits together. And so that's important. The fact that he's young is also important because we're, you know, dealing with two candidates, at least for the time being, who are, you know, octogenarians. And so that's an important thing. And he's reaching out to younger people as well as people who are uncomfortable with Trump. And he's saying, you know, that's okay. A lot like what Nikki Haley said, a lot like what DeSantis said, was that, you know, it's okay to have questions about Trump. You know, it's all right, you know, but now it's time to come back. And so he touches all of those aspects. But then again, we're also talking about he's not a woman, and he's another white male. And so those kind of pull against him as well. And he's not universally loved among the more moderate members of the MAGA movement.
Well, he is an interesting man. He's a best-selling author of a book that made him famous long before he was in politics, Hillbilly Elegy. And it was kind of a mantra for the white working class. He, at 5'7", will be the most diminutive person to be in either president or vice president in a long time if Trump wins. And he becomes the first, if he wins, the first president or vice president with facial hair since Roosevelt's first term, when Roosevelt was elected in 1932. So he's an interesting man. He has a wife who is Indian American, I believe, and she spoke last night quite eloquently. And before we go to the callers, I'm obviously getting some emails as well, and sometimes I wish some of these folks who email me stuff would say that on the air, but his speech was generally well received. He hit the marks, but what about this is the Hal and Monroda, but what about Don Jr.? Was he high on Red Bull last night? Asked Hal and Monroe. He
well, he certainly was energetic.
Yeah, to say the least. Bill Huey writes, "Aren't the white ear bandages the attendees at the convention so cute? I wonder." Well, anyway, I won't read the rest of it. Bill, if you want to call and say it, you can. But Trump, he certainly is savoring the moment, as any good politician would. He survived an assassination attempt, and in that moment, he showed great vigor as he got to the off the ground with Secret Service assistance and shook his fist and yelled fight as blood was streaming down his face. But Don Jr. called it not only tough, but Trump tough. Trump is the first U.S. president to have never had any member of his family on either side serve in the military, much less fight in a war. And Donald Trump, looking at him, he's not a physically strong man, but he of course, he conveys energy, and there is something to be said for that. 877-217-5757. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's just striking that on the GOP ticket you have two candidates, one of whom is a fake billionaire, but both of whom are owned by billionaires, running against the elites and what a platform that will serve the interests of those same sponsors that they have. So very interesting.
Well, the Republicans are sounding a lot like Democrats used to sound. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Republicans are, and Trump has been, reaching out to the frustration that working class America has felt for some time now, as the economy has shifted and basically shifted away from those kind of occupations that the working class had had and needs training to catch up with. And so he's been able to give voice to that frustration. I want to point out that J.D. Vance, despite as a literary critic, I thought the Hillbilly Elegy and having hillbilly blood myself was insulting and hard to read. So I don't really think of it as a great book or great literature at all. But he went to Yale Law School after apparently growing up in the poverty conditions and has been involved in a lot of major startups, and so is fairly wealthy, making it on himself. He also lives, about a half a mile from me in Virginia, and I'm altogether sure they bought a house in Cincinnati. But he's you can see him pretty much, every weekend walking up and down the streets. So I mean, I'm wondering if he's really an Ohio senator or the third Virginia senator.
listener notes, and let's give him his due. He is a Marine veteran, and he had some combat experience. He was a journalist, but so was Al Gore, who was the only member of his generation to have actually served in Vietnam. Some, like Clinton, got very lucky with a draft number of 311, and others, like Trump and Biden, got doctor's excuses for phony maladies. Trump, bone spurs. Biden, asthma. But Vance, he put his rear on the line and fought for our country, and God bless him for that. And he will be, if he wins, actually he's the first person on a ticket, on a national ticket since 2008 to have any military experience. The last was John McCain. 877-217-5757. Bill in Kenilworth. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for inviting me. I wonder two things. I wonder how the widow of the fallen firefighter feels about all the cute fun they're having with the ear bandages. And I wonder if Trump will wear that thing until the election as a reminder of his towering strength. Thanks.
Well, he was cut.
I wonder what the injury was. He was hit in the ear, apparently, right? But, I mean, I haven't seen any kind of report from the hospitals or from the government about, you know, how bad the injury was, what exactly the injury was. Did it take off part of his ear? Were they able to fix it? You know, and normally we hear that kind of stuff. So I find that interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he were hit even with a grazing blow from an assault weapon, he would lose his ear. And there is now speculation the assault weapon apparently was good enough to get close. Of course, the shooter was on his belly, and he knew he was about to get shot himself. But anyway, it knocked out the teleprompter, and it may have been shards from the teleprompter that got Trump. But at any rate, the man narrowly escaped an assassination. And on that day, at that time, he, I think, acted heroically. He did not cower.
No question about it. No question about that.
And that iconic photograph, my God, politicians live for that sort of thing, Mark. The day he dies, that will be on the front page of every paper.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that photograph a lot over the next few years.
877-217-5757. We're also going to talk about what's happening in the Democratic ranks. Joe Biden, the president, has COVID. And stories all over the planet today, including one I'm looking at now from the New York Post. Nancy Pelosi privately told Biden he can't beat Trump in 2024 and would ruin the Democrats' chances in the House if he stays in. We'll talk about that. And where we're going from here. And a listener asked Mark about the schism maybe between Gene Mills and Donald Trump. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard of The Advocate. Tonight, Donald Trump addresses the Republican convention in Milwaukee and millions of viewers and listeners across the country. WRKF is, of course, carrying the coverage of the Republican convention from Milwaukee. Why are they meeting in Milwaukee? They're meeting there because that is a swing state that probably will, the winner of the Wisconsin quite possibly will win the election. Now, for Biden, it appears that his margin of victory, if he is to stay in the race, is real thin, that he not only will have to carry Wisconsin, but also he'll have to carry Michigan and Pennsylvania. Right now, if you believe polls, Trump could win the election by just carrying one of those three states. And he's in Wisconsin, and a reminder, too, that the Democrats were going to meet in Wisconsin in 2020, but COVID happened. But before we get to Pelosi and Biden, Mark wrote a story this week about the Louisiana evangelical community being unhappy with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who in the past was pro-choice, has not denied... when Maureen Dowd gave him the chance of ever being responsible for an abortion from one of his friends. He is not strong enough on abortion for Mills, Gene Mills, the head of the Family Forum, and Tony Perkins. What do you make of this? They have nowhere else to go. I can't imagine them supporting anybody else, but does this mean anything? Mark?
Point out that, yeah, this was more of a, we disagree with you, but we're not, you know, they didn't and did not make it an issue at the Republican National Convention. I mean, that plank of the platform passed through easily, and they were just basically pointing out what is accurate is that since the 1970s that those platforms have been those planks have been in the platform. These anti-abortion planks had been in the platform of the Republican Party, and now they're kind of removed because Trump does not want to talk about abortion. He figures it's done now. You know, the states can decide, and he's finished with it.
Well, so. Most of the people in the country now, the South is, of course, blocking out abortion in almost all places, but most of the people in the country, because in these big states like California and New York, abortion is still legal, they have abortion availability. And as of now, with a doctor's prescription, you can get a pill to stop a pregnancy right here in Louisiana. So that's where Donald Trump says he wants it. Well, that's not really where Gene Mills and Tony Perkins want it. But that's an issue that I think Democrats will try to utilize, and who can blame them? We'll see what happens with that. But let's be concise in our comments, and before we go to the phones, stories here, there, and everywhere. Nancy Pelosi has done what Pat Caudill once did to Jimmy Carter. The weekend before the 1980 election, Caudill told Carter on an airplane that he could not win the presidential election, and Carter, according to observers, wept. Well, Joe Biden is not weeping. He's defiantly denying what Nancy Pelosi says is reality, that he cannot win and that he also will drag down everybody running as a Democrat. Will Joe Biden, at 81, listen to Nancy Pelosi, who is much more spry at 84 than he is at 81, Mark Ballard?
Well, that seems to be the thinking up here is that sometime within the next week or so, we're going to have him step aside. But, you know, again, like with politics, you just kind of have to see how that goes, because he's not going to be doing anything until he does it. So,
yeah, well, since we last spoke, and that's been a week, Trump gets shot and Biden gets COVID, and who knows what will happen next week. As I said, please be. Go ahead.
2 months. We've had 2 months ago. Trump was being convicted of felonies, and he was going to be, you know, up against two different criminal indictments that were much more serious than the Stormy Daniels affair. And so, and now 2 months into this, it's it. 2 months later, it looks like Trump's going to win easily. So,
yeah, I heard Donald Jr. last night describe the Stormy Daniels case as a bookkeeping error. Well, it was a little more than that. And nobody has gone and said that Trump was not allowed to defend himself. Well, yes, he was. He could have taken the stand, and he chose not to.
Right.
Reginald in Port Allen. Reginald, please be brief. You're on with Mark. Hi, Reginald.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, look, welcome to your guests. Hey, I hear people saying that Biden should step down. At this stage in the game, I would think that anybody saying that would be in the pocket, because even if so, Kamala is there.
All right. Well, Kamala is polling much better than Biden is. And just the fact that she is now the probably alternate candidate, today in Las Vegas, Trump's odds in one day have gone from 67% to 62%. So don't discount Kamala. And, of course, in a debate, I think she would be, and remember, debates obviously mean a lot. she would be much more of a threat to Biden or a threat to Trump than Biden was. Dan downtown. Dan, please be brief. You're on. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Yeah, Mr. Ballard, do Reverend Mills and Tony Perkins espouse that the Republicans passed the taxes needed to ensure the education and health care of the children who do live?
All right. It's an old axiom about being pro-life until birth. Obviously.
Well, they also espouse having they believe in funding the money for pregnant mothers to go through with it. They believe or they say they want spending for the children once they're born and for adoptions. So,
mm-hmm.
They do have some of that. I know that what he's referring to is that the Republicans, by and large, are against welfare type of payments and continued taxpayer funding of the public school system.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Mark.
Hey, so of course I'm voting for Trump, but I do have to be a little critical of Trump, and I don't blame him for what happened this weekend, but a man was killed, firefighter, and then some people were injured. And I don't know, has he shown some kind of acknowledgement, I don't know what the word would be, but support for these people, like to say, these people died coming to support me, and I appreciate, I don't know if you appreciate that, but.
A fair statement from Patrick. Thank you, sir. His son did last night, and I suspect Donald will today, but there have been reports that
he also did on Sunday.
Well, but has he called the widow? And I think he also approved a GoFundMe account, but it would be nice if he were to call the widow because this man was a supporter of his, and I was very pleased to hear the Democratic governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, said he was a hero and a patriot. He's supporting his candidate of choice, and he goes to a rally on a nice, beautiful day in Butler, Pennsylvania, and he steps in front of his family and saves their lives and lost his own. It reminds me a little bit of one of those incidents that is rarely reported. It was before TV when President Roosevelt was then President-elect Roosevelt in February. Then candidates took office the first week of March. He was shot at, and the mayor of Chicago, Anton Cermak, stepped in front of the bullet and took a bullet, died for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. David in Atlanta. David, please be brief. You're on with Mark. Good morning, sir.
Mr. Ballot, yesterday it was Trump or Vance that made a comment about the United States not coming to the defense of Taiwan. The NASDAQ took a major hit yesterday. It's taken another hit today. I don't know if Trump and Vance are aware, but about 90% of the vital and necessary defense of the United States comes from Taiwan.
All right. Well, that did cause the NASDAQ to go down. Today, some of the NASDAQ stocks are back up, but words have consequences. Taiwan is something that Biden says there's a red line there. If the Chinese try to attack Taiwan, that the United States will respond, and it would be akin to us, the United States, or even what happened with Russia too. What if the U.S. were to just suddenly say, "Let's go into Cuba. It's ours. It's 90 miles from our border. Threat to us. Let's go." But Mark, what about Taiwan?
Well, I think that's going to be where the rubber is going to hit the road on all of this down the road. I think that if had Biden not stood up to the Ukraine, that we'd already be dealing with Taiwan.
And Vance is a big anti-Ukraine guy as far as funding for that war. James in Metairie, right. Final caller for Mark. Hi, James.
Hi. Thank you, Jim. Good morning, Mark. The caller before the other one said that he's going to vote for a convicted criminal, de facto rapist, and a career fraudster. My question is this. To me, this is Ruth Bader Ginsburg 2.0.
All right. Well, I think he's talking about Biden not getting out. Biden's had a heroic life politically, but he may have stayed too long at the dance. And despite Trump's problems, well over 1 million people in Louisiana will vote for him, Mark.
That's true, and I mean right now it looks like he's going to win, And I guess the big question right now is, what about the House and the Senate?
But we'll pick up next week with Mark. Until then, stay tuned.